And welcome back to How to Survive 2025. I'm Brian Keene.
I'm Daisha M. Arnold.
I'm Jim Cobb.
Guys, good to be back here with you today. We are going to be, this is going to be part one of our two-part discussion on mindset. What we mean when we talk about mindset. We're talking about getting into the preparedness frame of mind, dealing with the what-if spiral that can happen, understanding panic and what to do when panic sets in. Are we qualified to talk about that, guys?
I am.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Daisha just jumped up and volunteered. Jim, I say we let her take the lead.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. The what-if spiral. Who cannot relate to staying up all night long wondering what if, what if, what if, what if a check bounces? What if I lose my job tomorrow? What if my pipes freeze? What if all day long? There are a few things you can do. You can freak out, man, or you can plan and prepare for crazy things to go wrong because it's life.
Yep. One of the things that I try to stress to people like in classes, and that is prepping can lend you a very, it is a calming effect because you know that if X happens, you're ready for it, at least to some degree. You know, there's a strong psychological component here with preparedness that I think a lot of people overlook.
So let's talk about some common things that people sit there and stress about and get into the spiral about and how to avoid that spiral. I'm a huge news junkie. I'm not a political junkie per se, you know, following one party's dogma or the other, but I am a huge news junkie, always have been. So for me, the spiral really kicked into gear when Russia invaded the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. You know, all the what ifs. What if there's an accident in a nuclear reactor and it melts down? What if Putin uses a battlefield nuke? What if Ukraine uses a dirty bomb inside mm-hmm. Russia? You know, all these possibilities. To stop that spiral, it's easy enough to remind myself, well, that's the other side of the world, and even if it does impact something here, I'm prepared. And basically just get the hell off the news for a while, go read a book or play Fallout or something like that. What are some examples from your own lives that you can think of?
I did freak out, about the Ukraine and Russia war. My stepmother's from Russia. So that caused a little closer to home stress. And then let's see. What about you, Jim?
Well, being firmly in Gen X, I was born and raised on global catastrophe, the, you know, threat of nuclear annihilation and all that kind of stuff. At last count, I have survived 87 predicted ends of the world. What's interesting is for me, you know, with the situation in Ukraine or, you know, any of the saber rattling that goes on, I pay attention to it, but it doesn't really concern me a whole lot because for me, it's like the boy who cried wolf over and over and over. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, one of the things that, you know, I get worked up about is my personal finances, mm-hmm. you know, losing a job or getting hurt and not being able to work or being the editor in chief of a magazine that gets canceled and losing 30 some percent of your income in an instant. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, any number of what we might call mundane disasters, you know, things that it's going to be the end of the world for me and my family. That's what it's going to feel like if one of us gets hurt in a catastrophic accident, but it's going to have zero impact on anybody outside my home. you know, and preparedness to me, I think there's this stereotype that preppers and survivalists, they're only looking at the long term, the, you know, the end of the world as we know it, where realistically we're a lot more likely to be impacted by these local disasters, these more mundane events, and we can prepare for them at the same time that we're preparing for the larger stuff. And like I alluded to earlier, prepping can be calming. It can give you a sense of confidence that, okay, yes, it's going to really suck if I lose my job tomorrow, but we have some money in the bank, we have food, we have other necessities set aside that can get us over that hump until a new job can be acquired. Stuff like that.
Thanks, Jim, for saving my butt.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, the apocalypse, particularly for us in the field we work in, you know, we make our living destroying the world, as it were. But, you know, the apocalypse doesn't have to be this big global event. It can be a very personalized individual thing. It can be the, you know, illness or loss of a family member. It can absolutely be the loss of a job, mm-hmm. and, you know, dire economic circumstances. You know, I myself, I live along the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania. I've lived here 9 years, and in that time, I've gone through 7 floods. It's the river's going to flood again. I know this. That's something that I can absolutely prepare for. In fact, it just happened last week as the remnants of Tropical Storm Debbie blew through. And there is a strange comfort in knowing I'm prepared for that. And then, you know, when the flood happens and it's over and the water recedes, getting everything ready and prepping for the next one. It's the same as changing the oil in the car or getting the garden ready when spring comes. It's just something that I know to do. So Jim, let's talk about economic preparedness and panic in that moment when you lose the job or your hours get cut at work or you get laid off, because that's something right now, given the economy here in August of 2024, that's something a lot of our listeners can probably identify with. And, you know, keeping in mind that this week we're focusing on that initial panic. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
The first thing you can do is stop and breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, just stop what you're doing, sit down, and take 3 or 4 deep breaths. And I mean, in all the way down into the belly, hold it for a second, and then blow it out very deliberately. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Do this 3 or 4 times. And I mean, it sounds so silly, but it really works. It really helps kind of center yourself and, you know, take a beat and understand, okay, this sucks, but it's not the end of the world. Your record for surviving catastrophe is unmatched. You're every day is a new day that you break the record. Concentrate on that and realize that you've made it through all these other things in your life. You can make it through this. And ideally, you'll have some preps to fall back on again to get you over that initial hump. You know, whether it's having a small amount of savings in the bank, having established some type of network in your field so that when you lose that job, you have people you can reach out to and say, hey, do you have any openings? Are you aware of anything? Can you suggest my name for different things that come up, things like that? You know, here's a real life example. And I mentioned this before. I was editor in chief for Prepper Survival Guide magazine. And literally out of nowhere, the publisher decided to cancel it. There was no warning. There was no, hey, you know, sales are a little soft. It was one day just boom, we're not doing this magazine anymore. And I'm very blessed to be in a position that this isn't catastrophic loss, but it's a big deal. It's 30-some percent of my annual income gone in a heartbeat. Within 24 hours, I had reached out to my network of people. I had established two different ongoing writing gigs that are going to make up about 95% of what I lost. And I was able to do that because over the years, I had made a conscious, deliberate effort to connect with people in my field, to, you know, partner with them on various things so that, you know, not primarily in a situation like this, but as an added bonus is if something happens, I have people I can reach out to who might be able to help me line up new work.
Mm-hmm. Has this ever happened to you before, Jim? Have you ever been in a situation, or can you think of a situation where it was like 10 times worse?
When my wife and I were younger, when our kids were very little, mm-hmm. we, and this is going back about 20 years, okay, just to give you a rough time frame. It was rough. It was really, really bad for us financially. We were subsisting on less than $12,000 a year. And our house payment was $1,000 a month.
Been there.
Yeah, I can do that math. Yeah.
I mean, that is a constant robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, that's scrounging spare change to buy a gallon of milk. Mm-hmm. You know, and I have to give credit where credit is due. My wife is responsible for 95% of our recovery from that because she is a financial genius as mm-hmm. far as I'm concerned. When it comes to personal finances, she was able to balance everything and dig us out of that hole. You know, we're both working our tails off trying to get money to come in. Mm-hmm. But that's only part of the equation when it comes to finances. It's not just a matter of having the money coming in. You have to be able to do something constructive with it. Mm-hmm. And that's where she really, you know, worked magic. It was like sorcery to me. To this day, I don't know how she did it. But, you know, 20 years later, we're both sitting at, you know, credit ratings well above 800. And we would have never done it without her.
That's awesome.
During that time, though, what I refer to as the dark time. Mm-hmm. It was bad. It was really, really bad. I mean, financial problems cause an unbelievable amount of stress, you know, and it bleeds into every aspect of your relationships with people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Somebody invites you to go along to a movie or to go out for drinks or whatever, and you're like, I can't because I have to buy groceries, mm-hmm. you know. One of the things that I insisted on when we were going through all that was anytime we got some money coming in, like bonus money, like we had a rummage sale or we found a $20 bill or something like that, I insisted that half of it went towards bills or whatever, and half of it we had to spend on something fun because you need that release. You know, so for example, you know, and this again, this is 20 some years ago. If we got an extra $20, okay, that to play with, we would get pizza or some other kind of takeout and we rent a movie or two. It's cheap entertainment, but it was a release. It was, you know, for that 2-3 hours, we didn't have to think about money, we didn't have to think about bills, we could just enjoy being parents and playing with our kids and everything else. And all of this ties into this mindset where you can't be all doom and gloom. You can't go through that 24/7. You can't just sit and ruminate over how bad the world is. Mm-hmm. Instead of doing that, take steps to make it better.
That's awesome.
So what if there's somebody listening right now and they suffer from just crippling anxiety, or maybe not even crippling anxiety, just run-of-the-mill anxiety. You know, that is certainly on the rise globally, not just here in America. how do they avoid that panic, that doom and gloom? Because that can be immobilizing, really. You know, you lose your job and you sink into depression and anxiety, and instead of job hunting, you're just sitting there on the couch or probably more likely under the covers in bed. What are some simple non-judgmental steps they can take, little incremental steps to get out of that mindset?
So the biggest thing that someone can do when they're kind of sitting in their dirty bathwater is be very, very, very careful about what you are putting into your body. And I mean this physically, and I mean this like emotionally and entertainment wise and not entertainment wise, but are you clinging to vices that are not, you know, helping you out at all? Are you stuck on Twitter, doom scrolling, the latest debate? Be very, very careful of what you put into your body. And when you do take things away, so if you are going to, go lighter on smoking weed or drinking your alcohol or whatever, replace it with something constructive and healthy and helpful. So if you're not doom scrolling Twitter, maybe you pick up a paperback, or maybe you are meditating instead, listening to some music that really speaks to your soul, even if it's, you know, that music that we rock out to when things are shit. Definitely replace them with things that are much better.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, one of the biggest arguments my wife and I ever had, and we don't fight that off. We've been together over 30 years, and I can probably count on two hands and have fingers left over the number of times we really, really had bad arguments. But one of the things we went back and forth about for years was I was a smoker. Mm-hmm. And even when we were at our brokest, I still managed to come up with money every day to buy cigarettes. And that drove her nuts, because she would say, you know, if we can't afford milk, you can't afford tobacco. And eventually I did quit. And I have not turned into the type of ex-smoker that I feared I would be. I'm not, you know, militant about it. But at the same time, I can tell you from experience that it helps to not smoke. You know, I've never been a drinker. I never got into weed or anything like that. Tobacco was my vice. And at my worst, I was, you know, almost two packs a day. I always found that money every day, you know, but the benefits of quitting go far beyond financial. You know, my lungs are a lot better. Granted, I replaced it with eating, which wasn't the best choice.
You got to replace it with something.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I'm healthier. Mm-hmm. I don't have that stress of how am I going to afford this? I mean, I was walking through Walmart the other day and happened to go past their tobacco area. I don't know what it's like anywhere else in the country, but here in southern Wisconsin, cigarettes are damn near $10 a pack.
Yeah, I think
that's true. And I about lost it. I mean, they were like six when I quit, and I thought that was a lot. That's a lot of money to be throwing away that you could be putting towards something more positive, more constructive, and freeing up your budget a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Another point I want to make is perspective. So you were talking about how recently the magazine just completely shut down, but having like that in the back of your head, like this is not the worst thing I have ever been through, is really what keeps you, like you take that breath and you're like, okay, at least it's not that one time when I was, you know, in the shit.
Yeah.
And perspective is really, really important. And that's not to say that you need to diminish your circumstance because other people have it worse. No, the fear, the anxiety, those feelings are extremely valid. Normal people have these feelings when faced with hard times. But you also have to know that if you've gotten through worse before, that you can get through what you're facing now.
Yep. And I wanted to circle back to something. you had talked about, you know, you're just sitting there in your bath, just running it over and over in your head. And you know, one of the most important things to do, I think, is in the self-defense world, they call it get off the X. Okay. Where you need to take action. Mm-hmm. You need to do something. Now, here's a story. Years ago, when my kids were in elementary and middle school, there was this program called Destination Imagination. It was one of these academic team competitions where think, okay, we're going to drop the egg from the top of the building and we need to make sure it doesn't break. And you come up with a solution for that. But then there was also an element of theater, and it was an interesting program. But I was a coach for it briefly. And one of the parts of these regional and national competitions was what they called an instant challenge, where you would take the team, which was anywhere from like 4 to 6 kids, and you'd put them in a room with a couple of adults. All the windows are closed and the door is closed, and nobody can talk about what happens in that room, which sounds a whole lot creepier than it really was. Okay? What would happen is the team would be presented with a small tray of props like pipe cleaners, paper cups, tape, thumbtacks, things like this. And they would be presented with a challenge. You need to build the tallest tower you can with these supplies in 3 minutes, go. Okay. And as the coach, I could sit in the room and watch them, but I couldn't say anything. I could give them no feedback. They had to do this all on their own. And I'll never forget this. The team that I was coaching, they pull the cover off the tray and look at the supplies. They start the clock, and these kids froze. They just stood there staring at these things, and they had like a 4-minute time frame. And for 3 solid minutes, they didn't speak. They just looked at each other and looked at the tray, looked at each other, looked at the tray. And finally, one of them picked something up and started fidgeting with it. And that's when it started. Everyone. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, wait, we can do this. We can do this. We can do this. And they cobbled something together very quickly. It didn't do well score-wise. But the takeaway was,
get off X.
Nothing happened until they took action. And they picked it up and started playing with it. And that's what started the gears going. When you're faced with a situation where you're sitting there, you don't know what to do, you're depressed, you're anxious, whatever it is.
Do something,
or you're going to do nothing.
Right. That leads me to another part of our discussion. We mentioned that we want to talk about panic this week. Nadesha and Jim, you both mentioned that feeling that spiral, that helplessness is normal. It's a normal human emotion. Yep. So is panic. Mm-hmm. And so is shock. Our bodies go into shock for a very specific reason. The key is to recognize when that's happening, recognize when panic is happening, and sort of short circuit that or get yourself out of that. We had talked off the air. Jim, you had asked if I'm comfortable telling this story. I am comfortable telling it. I'll warn our listeners, it might be a little disturbing for, let's say, children under the age of 14. So maybe ask them to leave the room for this part. But several years ago now, we mentioned flooding earlier in the show. I was cleaning up after another flood, specifically at my second ex-wife's house. Her place just got destroyed in the aftermath of this flood. And I said, well, you know, I'll come over and take care of it, because she was, to use Daisha's metaphor, sitting in her dirty bathwater. And I don't blame her. She was in shock, the amount of devastation. And I said, you know, I'll get it taken care of for you. So I had a fire going to burn all the debris, all the logs and trees and telephone poles and tires and everything else that had washed through her yard. And I had used kerosene, did not realize that I had gotten some on my arm. And when the wind shifted, that fire blew towards me, and I went up like a human candle. Second and first degree burns on my forehead and scalp. Second and third degree on my left arm, to the point where my elbow, you could see the bone. Now, a caveat to our listeners who maybe don't know me as a writer. Here's a little fact. Most writers do not have a 401k, and we also do not have health insurance. Mm-hmm. Unless we're lucky enough to have a partner who has health insurance through their job. So in the immediate aftermath, I stop, drop, and roll in the flood water, okay, and I pop up, and I this is exactly my thought process. I'm fine. I don't have health insurance. I'm not going to go to the hospital. I'm going to take care of this myself. I'm a country boy. I can do this. At this point, I'm now walking towards my ex-wife's house. I've been in the flood water, so bacteria and infection are concerns. So I hope she has Neosporin and hydrogen peroxide in there. And then I see my ex-wife and our son come running out of the house because, of course, they'd heard me scream. And in my shock state, I'm trying to reassure them. And I go, it's fine. I'm fine. I'm going to be okay. And our son, who's a little guy at that point, has never said a curse word in his life, says, fine, Dad, your effing arm is coming off.
And poor baby.
I look down, and sure enough, the skin around my elbow looks like dripping candle wax.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's not good. At which point I realized you are in shock. You are panicking. You are not helping anyone by insisting that you're not going to a hospital. Sit your ex
down.
The opposite of Jim's advice, but I sat down. I waited for the paramedics. I focused on breathing for those minutes, folks. I just focused on breathing. I shut down worrying about how the hell I was going to pay for it. I focused on staying conscious and breathing. When the paramedics got there, I didn't have to focus so much on breathing anymore. I just focused on staying conscious and communicating with them. When they got me on the ambulance and they got a morphine drip in me, the shock abated to the point where when my current wife, Mary, showed up, because my ex-wife called her and said, you need to get over here. There's been an accident. When she showed up, I waved at her and said, I'm fine, and gave her a thumbs up.
With your good hand?
Yeah, with my good hand. Panic and shock are normal. Depression and stress and anxiety, these can also be normal reactions. What you have to do is learn how to react to them. You don't let them rule you. You recognize that they're there. What do you guys have to add to that? What do you do? Daisha, with your background, what do you do when someone's in shock?
Well, it's different for me. So I'm not a normal human. I have very specialized training in dealing with the most grotesque, gory, outlandish injuries and illnesses that you could possibly think of while being shot at and still being able to function in some helpful way. So there was training for that. Sure. Paramedics and EMTs, they also know that fight or flight, that they have the fight and they don't have the flight, or else they wouldn't have made it through training. But it's a lot different when it's someone close to you. It's someone that you care for, but there's still like this, and we've talked about this a few times, this disassociation. It is in the long term, it is not a healthy coping mechanism. That's why a lot of people don't become EMTs and paramedics. But disassociation from the person being your person. This summer, my husband fell and again, I guess no kids are listening, but snapped his wrist, look like at a question mark. And we have two very small children. And so it was later in the evening. He had chased the dog into the neighbor's yard, stepped on mud that was covered by leaves, took all his weight on his right wrist. And so I'm already in my nightgown. We're getting ready for bed. The kids are on their tablets and stuff, getting ready for bed. Well, husband is screaming in the yard. I think he wants to show me something cool. I mean, being like having a medical background, it was pretty cool, but not for anyone else. So the kids, I'm like, go to your room. I felt bad. Normally in my training, I would have splinted the injury and then treated and got him stable. But I really just needed to get dressed and take his ass to the emergency room. So kids went to their room. I went and got ready. He's breathing into a bag on the porch. You know, we get pile everyone into the car and we get him to the emergency room. My kids did not freak out because I did not freak out.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
Yep.
The whole time Greg's screaming and crying, all every bump, every turn in the car was excruciating. I'm talking to my kids and telling them how they're doing such a great job. And also I'm sick to my stomach because I'm worried about I didn't check for blood flow. What if there's no blood flow? It's 20 minutes to the emergency room. That's too long to go without. It's not. You can go probably about an hour tourniquet. But anyway, I digress. You have to keep your cool. You have to. If you know that you are a flight person, designate somebody else beforehand. This is part of that preparedness.
Yep.
Is go ahead and identify, like, this is not my role. I cannot do this. You are going to be the one that takes charge. So when crap hits the fan, someone falls, breaks their leg, everyone knows their roles. Your job's to freak out and their job is to act.
100%.
Okay. But what if
it's me?
What if you're a single mom listening right now? Oh, it's you and your kid, and she knows she's flight, not fight. How does she overcome that?
Just 911. When in doubt, you call somebody else. You call an audible. I don't care. If you can't do it yourself and you know that you can't do it yourself, make a plan.
Well, and on top of that, one of the things that you can do is learn to recognize when you're starting to spiral, when you're starting to get that flight emotion. And when you start to feel those alert signals, do something. You know, try to head it off at the pass, so to speak. You know, we talked about breathing. We talked about, you know, trying to alter your thinking a little bit. Try these little tips and tricks to center yourself a little bit and understand that, like you mentioned, your kids are going to mirror what you do. And if you start freaking out, they're going to freak out and you're just going to feed off of one another. You know, I firmly believe that there are people who are kind of genetically predisposed to the flight.
Yeah.
Okay. But that doesn't mean you can't change that, or you can't learn coping mechanisms for dealing with it in a crisis.
Some techniques that we used in the military, we call muscle memory. So muscle memory is just a task that you are able to mindlessly do no matter where your brain is. It's kind of hard to have muscle memory to react to something like an injury or fire. Goodness gracious. But maybe practice. I don't know how you would practice muscle memory.
Well, that is actually an excellent segue to a homework assignment that I want to give to our listeners. Because yes, on occasion, we will hand out homework assignments here on How to Survive 2025. You know, we talk about getting into the preparedness frame of mind so that maybe when it happens, instead of flight, you are fight. Now, we've got listeners everywhere in all kinds of different socioeconomic situations, living conditions, geographically. Take a good look around while you're listening to this, and think of some reasonable things that could happen that you can prepare for. I'm not talking about an asteroid hitting the planet. I'm not talking about a black hole suddenly being spotted right outside our solar system. I'm talking about reasonable things. If you live in an apartment complex, maybe a fire. If you live along the river, like myself, maybe a flood, a blizzard.
Power outage.
Absolutely power
pipes outage. Freezing, because that happens. That happened to us over Christmas.
You know, if you're in the city, maybe think about a political protest gone awry, or, you know, some sort of civil unrest. Think about one of those scenarios this week, listeners, and then, you know, come up with a simple plan that encompasses yourself, any loved ones you may have, any pets you may have, and what you will do in that situation, and really think it through and kind of start exercising that muscle memory. Jim, Dacia, what are some things to consider when they're planning for these scenarios, for these someone who's never prepped before? We're trying to teach them to get into the preparedness mindset.
Yeah, so something really easy we did. Locally, our electric company decided on one of the coldest days of winter to do some work and have a power outage for X amount of hours. And my husband and I went back and forth about what are we going to do? Are we going to go to my father-in-law's house down, you know, just to take the kids and hang out? And finally, I was like, let's stay home. Let's stay home and just figure it out. And just in case, because maybe one day it'll happen. And then 2 months later, no kidding, we lost our radiator pipes froze over Christmas. And because we had already experienced not having the electricity and not running heat in the house, we knew what our wood burner's capable of. And we knew how far our kerosene heaters would go, used very responsibly. But like over Christmas, we stayed home. We weathered it out. It was cold. This was 2022. It was freezing over Christmas. The kids didn't even notice. They don't even remark about it to this day. We kept our cool, and they got to enjoy Christmas at home instead of going to grandpa's house. So,
and those type of practice runs or drills are very important, no matter where you are on your preparedness journey,
yes.
Whether you're at day one or you're at year 40. It's critical to do these test runs so you can fill holes and find gaps and find things that you've overlooked and take care of them when the stakes aren't really high. You know, one of the things that we talk about, and we'll get into this at some point down the road, are things like wild edibles and foraging for food. If you're going to do that, it makes a lot more sense to do it in your backyard first. So that if you have a bad reaction, you can get help or at least get to the nearest toilet, rather than it being day five in a grid down scenario and you decide to break out your book of wild edibles and let's see what we can find, you know, and that, you know, after you start to have a reaction, that's when you remember that your indoor plumbing isn't working anymore, you know. Some people will go so far as to, you know, shut off the main breaker to the house and shut off all power to the house for a weekend and just, you know, test their gear and their plans and all that. You can do that, but you don't have to go that far. Now, and I say that because when you shut that breaker off, you've got a refrigerator, you've got a freezer that, you know, you're going to impact the food that's inside of it. An easier way to do it is just, okay, we're not going to access the refrigerator or freezer for the weekend. We're no TV, no lights. We're just pretending that there's a power outage. And that's a really good way to start out. You know, you don't have to go full bore with it right out of the gate. You're going to lose people, you know. I remember when our kids were little, we started doing practice runs for evacuating the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd say, okay, you know, I'm going to hit this timer and I want to see how long it takes for each of you to get your bag, get out to the car, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, the first time we did it was like 10, 12 minutes and nobody's packed anything that they really needed. And, you know, it was just, it was a comedy routine, you know, mm-hmm. It was horrible, but we learned from it, you know, and we were able to say to the kids, okay, you don't need all of these stuffed animals. You know, you don't need, you know, 7 pair of shoes,
aww,
you know, things like that. And if you, particularly if you start when the kids are young,
mm-hmm.
they develop these habits early, to a large degree, it becomes what you talk about, muscle memory. Muscle
memory. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's important.
One more exercise that our listeners can do is try cutting your budget in half and living on that for a certain amount of time. I don't care if it's a week, 2 weeks, just cut it in half, really budget your groceries, budget your gas, cut back on your subscriptions for a little bit. You don't, you know, maybe this month you don't, you listen to Pandora with commercials. I don't know what people are doing today. But,
something I want to recommend in my daily work as a writer, I'm a big note taker. Anytime mm-hmm. I'm working on a book or a story, I carry around a little Moleskine notebook and I'll write notes to myself in there. You know, things I want to do with the book. Maybe it's a snatch of dialogue or maybe it's a plot point that I don't want to forget. When it comes to these preparedness scenarios and this homework, something you may want to do is make some notes. And let's go with a simple one. Let's say, I'll give you a scenario. You live in a 3-bedroom apartment with your cat, Sprinkles, and your kid. And you decide, okay, I'm going to get my preparedness mindset in case of a fire. Okay, so start working on the scenario. And you may realize, oh, I only have 1 fire extinguisher. And it's in the kitchen of my three-room apartment. You know, so maybe you add a note, you know, get 2 more fire extinguishers, 1 for each room. Maybe you write a note to yourself, check the batteries on the smoke detector. Then you start imagining, okay, a fire has broken out. What do I do with Sprinkles? How the hell am I going to get Sprinkles and the kid out of the apartment? Invest in a cat carrier. You jot yourself a note, you know, if you don't have one of those. Think about various scenarios that could happen depending on where it breaks out in the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the exit? If it starts in your kid's room, how do you get your kid out of the room? Just note all these things. Now, don't spiral.
Mm-mm.
Don't panic. This is just a homework assignment. This isn't mm-hmm. the class final. You know, it's not happening for real. You're preparing yourself for it. But when you're done, sit back and actually take a look at those notes, and that can really help you. Okay, now I have a checklist. Now I know what to do. And you know, a couple weeks later, you're ready for a fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
one
really.
Of the things to add to that with the fire prep is not only do you need working smoke detectors, but make sure you can hear them wherever you are in your home.
Mm-hmm.
A girl that my son was dating for a long time, and to this day, we still consider her part of the family, even though they broke up. This is going back a few years ago. It was Thanksgiving weekend. She and her mom had just moved into a new apartment. They'd been there maybe a couple of weeks. Late at night, all of a sudden they hear this pounding on the door. It's the neighbor. And it was one of they were like townhomes where they're, you know, just side by side apartments, and the neighbor's pounding on the door. There's a fire. You need to get out. You need to get out. It wasn't until they walked into the hallway that they heard just the faintest noise from the smoke detector out there. Oh. They had heard nothing in their apartment. Turns out the neighbor's truck in his garage had somehow started on fire. I never did get the full story behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of smoke damage, things like that. When they exited the house or exited the apartment and went out in the parking lot, and again, this is late November, Neither one of them had shoes on. I think the daughter had a jacket, but mom did not. And they were out there for hours until finally the fire department gave them the all clear to go in and just get some stuff, you know? So number one, make sure that you can hear your smoke detector from your bedroom, wherever, you know, you have these positioned. Make sure it's loud enough that it's going to wake you up, you know? Another thing we can do is what I call the home cache. That's C-A-C-H-E. It is not pronounced cache like you will hear in some TV shows. It's cache. It refers to just a little assemblage of supplies that you've got stationed somewhere. If you have a garage or an outbuilding on your property, think about putting together a small tote with a jacket, a pair of shoes, pair of socks, things like that, that you can squirrel away in case you need to evacuate your house if there's a fire and you don't have time to grab that stuff. Yep. Now, I understand that there's this mindset, well, you should always sleep with a pair of shoes right next to the bed and a pair of pants and yada, yada, yada. I haven't done that since my wife was pregnant, okay? I just, you know, if I've got to evacuate, I'm getting out and I'll, you know, deal with it afterwards. If it's late November, December, there's snow on the ground, you're going to want some type of footwear. The home cache can provide that for you.
That's awesome. I never thought of that. And I thought of everything. So along with this homework, it's a lot of fun. I'm known as Dystopian Mom. And it has a lot to do with some of the novels that I write. I write a lot of dystopian fiction where the mom saves the world. And what this comes from is my heightened anxiety and my heightened need to plan everything. To make sure that I am going to be able to be okay, and also that my children are going to be okay. So I actually do this exercise. I write down all these plans to get, you know, out safely, and whether it be a zombie apocalypse or a total societal collapse. You follow the exercise and you might be halfway to your own novel.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, guys, any final thoughts before we let our listeners go for this week?
I'm just looking over my notes quick to make sure we didn't miss. Well, one recommendation, in addition to the homework assignment, if you're looking for reading material on this type of thing, like we've been talking about with mindset, look for The Unthinkable by Amanda Ripley. I think there's a new edition that's just coming out or just came out. I haven't picked up the new one yet. I'm still operating off the one that's several years old. I consider that book to be required reading for anybody who's interested in preparedness. Without getting into a full-blown book review, basically what she did was she spent a lot of time consulting with experts and looking at major disasters and how people survived and the things that mentally and physically, what changed with them as they're going through these stressful situations like 9/11. You know, she talked to survivors who made it out of the building. What did you do differently? You know, was kind of the approach. What was your mindset like? What was going through your head? How did you react? Things like that. And you learn a lot about how we are hardwired to deal with stressful situations and how we can improve our reactions. It's a phenomenal book, and it's not real dry, and you know, it's entertaining as well as educational.
And we're going to talk about some of that next week as well. As I said at the start of the show, this is part one of a two-part look at mindset. Next week, we're going to talk about the letters PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. What happens to your mind and your body during and after traumatic events? We'll discuss how to help loved ones cope in the aftermath. Grief, survivor's guilt. We're really going to dig deep next week. It's going to be a fun show, it sounds like. and, you know, Daisha, Jim's not going to do it, so I think you and I should do it for him. Folks, as Jim said, the magazine he's been the editor for just went out of business, 30% of his income. Now, he was absolutely right to plug the book that he did. Yes. The Unthinkable is a Bible. But maybe you pick up one of Jim's books this week as well. You ain't going to learn anything from mine unless maybe it's How to Kill a Zombie. And we're not going to get into that level of preparedness on this show. But Jim has an extensive bibliography of well-written, straight fact, no BS prepping books. Look them up on Amazon. Jim, C-O-B-B. Dacia's holding one up right now.
Oh, right now, because I own it. It is mine. And not because of the show. I've actually had this book long before I even knew who Jim was.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. Of course. And Dacia, you need to get the revised second edition.
All right, we'll do.
Because there's a lot. There's a, probably about 30% of the book was added on to and new material. We changed some things, took some things out that I didn't really care for. And it's what we in the business call the author's preferred edition.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you both. And listeners, we all appreciate you. We are now on Spotify and Audible and iHeartRadio and should be up on Apple by the time this episode drops. If you're enjoying the show, if you're digging it, please consider leaving a review. That really helps us out. It's that simple. Guys, anything you want the audience to know before we leave?
No, just come back next week and hear what we have to say.
Yeah, for that lighthearted discussion about PTSD and survivors.
So excited about it.
All right. We'll see you next time, folks.
Sounds good.